Hello, everybody. This is Clementina, a New Yorker living in Southern California. And I would just like to take a moment to invite everybody to have a nice few breaths. Just relaxing the shoulders, letting love and light in. It knows what to do and it knows where to go, releasing tension, fear, and all that is no longer needed. And may everybody hear what they're meant to hear. May I say what I'm meant to say. And may everybody's process be blessed and everybody's recovery be golden. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And thank you, Miss Judy, for asking me to be a speaker. And this is my first time being recorded, and I still have to decide if I'm going to let it stay. So I am just hoping to be an instrument of whatever's meant to be shared. I have a couple of notes, but without glasses, right? No. So where I could start from is I am first born American in my family, and I am born of an Egyptian Jewish mother, Cairo, and an English Catholic father. And I know that might sound like some hot exotic romance, but truly they met in the Bronx. So anyway, so that's where my beginning, my that's where I began. My mom was 15 years old when she became pregnant with me. So she was a baby having a baby. And my dad said, let's get married, and they were so young that it was illegal to get married in the state of New York, and they had to go to Maryland to get married. And they stayed in the city, and they were surrounded by family. And in the first year or two of my life, I received just so much love. My mother said that my aunts would fight over me. Who's going to have me today? And they would prop me up in a big pram and perambulate up and down the avenues, showing me off. And my mom would call around the Bronx and say, "Where's my baby? Who has my baby?" So I loved hearing those stories. There weren't a lot of fun stories growing up, but the little ones I have, I like to hold on to. And then my brother came along, and supposedly he was colic and cried all the time. And I think that's when the stress started in my family. And back then, doctors gave moms and dads bad advice. So I don't think he got what he needed as a little baby. And then we had some issues, so we moved out of the city and went to other parts of New York. And now we were away from the family. We were away from our grandmothers and aunts and cousins, and we were in some part of Long Island, New York, that wasn't, I don't know, it just, maybe it's a great place, but I have not great memories because my dad didn't have an easy time finding work. And so it was a lot of stress on the family. I know now, I always thought my parents could have used AA and Al-Anon, and no doubt that would have helped. But come to find out in recent times, they also could have used other programs. They could have used help with sex addiction as well as alcohol and codependency. So dad could hardly work, and he was in and out of the bars, and mom was strapped with now three children and with no money and not able to pay the bills. And she was just livid all the time, and just full of rage. So yeah, so I learned at a very early age how to tap dance really fast. And what I mean is I learned how to soothe my mother to try to get her to be kind to us, or at the very least, just not hurt us so much. And my brother was always pulling things apart, and he was just a curious child full of wonderment. So he wanted to know how the radio worked, so he pulled it apart, and then he couldn't get it back together. He wanted to know how matches work, and then he got nervous and threw them in the garbage, and it set the garbage on fire and the floor. So I was always wanting him to just be quiet and just do headstands with me in the living room, just so mommy wouldn't have a rage. But that wasn't the case. So we endured a lot of corporal punishment as children, and I learned how to change diapers, make beds, and do dishes at 5 and 6 years old, and I did it pretty well for a little one. One thing I wanted to say, I wanted to start with that today is the anniversary of my brother's death. He died 2 years ago. And when I was selecting what day to speak, I thought, do I really want to speak on this day? And I said, you know what? That'll be my way of honoring him. So, yes, my brother Frankie, we were Irish twins. And if somebody doesn't know what that means we were born close together in age. So Frankie got in trouble a lot. And while mom was trigger warning, hitting him, then she would come for me, even if I wasn't in trouble. So I learned that I would nervously start cleaning. And when she would come at me with the rage in her eyes, if she could catch me cleaning, then she would snap out of it and just leave the room and not hurt me. So that became a really good party trick for me. Learn how to clean. And I just, anyway, I don't want to lament that. So it was a really hard childhood. And then finally, my dad got a good job and we moved out of Long Island and we went upstate to Rockland County. And then things were different. Then we weren't rich by any means, but we had an apartment and dad started making money and we planned vacations and mom wasn't worried how the bills were going to get paid and dad wasn't drinking, but all of a sudden he was getting really fat. So ding ding ding. And just to go back a tiny bit, as a little kid, I started eating cereal like a lot of people. I started eating cereal. Boy, what a treat. It's crunchy. I don't want to describe it, but it was everything in a box in a bowl in my tummy. And then why not have another bowl? And then while we're at it, maybe a third. Hey, and I can remember my mom saying, where'd all the cereal go to? So there was that. And then school lunches, we didn't have paper bag lunches. And those were filled with all kinds of preservatives and God knows what else. And then when my mom would cook, this is when we were really young, like I said, she was incredibly depressed. I know I'm skipping around, pardon me. If I asked her what was for dinner, she had something nasty to say. Usually it was one of three or four of her comments. And doing my OA journey, I got to see that there was a lot of guilt around enjoying food. There was a lot of guilt around the fact that it's my birthright to even have food. And it was just pretty horrible just to feel guilty about asking what's for dinner. And she never had to worry about us cleaning our plates because we did. I mean, we did. We didn't have a bunch of snacks. We didn't have money. Anyhow, I wasn't sure I was going to mention this, but it's strange knowing I'm being recorded. My mom tried to commit suicide when I was about 6 years old, 5 or 6. And I just knew she was doing something wrong. I walked in on her while she was in the act of trying to commit suicide. And I ran and got my dad. And my father came and trigger warning.
10 minutes, Clementina.
Thank you. I'm glad you interrupted me because I'm not going to go through the details. It's a good reminder. So, in order to get her to stop, he hurt her. So, it's a double trauma to me. And yeah, and I just, nobody comforted me. Nobody addressed me. And it's, decades later, those feelings come up. That's how this recovery works, right? Okay. So then we had moved to the other place and we had some, steady income. And now I'm a pre-teenager and a teenager. And then I become friends with a family, three sisters, and we love to get together and eat. And I've talked about this here. I can remember us going babysitting and we were at this one house that was really messy because we were all meat freaks. And it was so messy. And I remember we were just raiding their cabinets and eating crunchy, sugary things. And then they came home early and we shoved the food in the couch cushions. And to this day, we laugh at it because that was so against how we were. We were meat freaks. But we laughed because we said, they're so messy and dirty, they'll never know. I wonder if they ever found it. Anyway, so yeah, I had a girly figure at an early age, and I wasn't fat, but I always thought I was because I was curvy. I was always comparing myself to the gals who had straight up and down figures, and then fast forwarding, years later, I married somebody who had a drinking problem, no surprise. And while in Al-Anon, somebody mentioned OA, and I thought, oh my God, I have to go check this out. Now, when I entered OA, I was about 125 pounds and I'm 5'6", so thin and curvy. And I didn't think so. And but something about it made me stay. It's because I did these binges. I would just be so stuffed. And my food combinations would be off, so I would be bloated. And then I got a sponsor right away, and she said to me, do you think you would consider giving up sugar? And the first thing out of my mouth was, well, what am I going to do when I go to a wedding? And you gals have heard me say this before. I told this story. Well, I didn't even have a wedding on the calendar. I just was thinking of, that spongy, sweet stuff. And she said, well, it's just one day at a time. Now, I had heard that slogan for a long time in Al-Anon, but it was the first time I saw the sparkly lights around it. And I said, okay, I'm going to do this one day at a time. And I did. And I have 100% abstinence for 33 years from cane sugar. And people say to me to this day, they go, you're so disciplined. And I say, no, it's grace. I didn't do that. I remember praying for the willingness of the willingness because I remember struggling. I remember having some problems. I couldn't quit my job and I needed to. And I was stuffing the food in my face and crying at the same time and choking. I know that's not a pretty picture. And I know. In this fellowship, I'm not alone. And I thought, wow, what a problem. And so I said, God, how could I ask you for the willingness if I'm not willing? I feel like I'm doing double talk and betraying myself. And then that's when I discovered, pray for the willingness or the willingness. And then all the doors opened up. So once I became absent from cane sugar. Then I became a food detective. That meant I had to read labels and know everything, know what was in it. Because
5 minutes, Clementina.
thank you, dear. I don't believe in, oh, if it's the fifth ingredient or the 30th. No. I could be in the clutches of a binge or that kind of fire. And if I read it has cane sugar, I don't have any temptation to have that thing. That's grace. That's not little me. So little by little, I'll start getting to how this works for me. If so, my absent list is long now. I have a lot of things on it. And if I tried to do that all at once, it would have triggered another phenomenon in me. I would have had anorexic thinking where everything has to be pure and perfect all the time. And there's no way to maintain that and have sanity at the same time. So it's a recipe for failure. So my program has been about offering up one thing at a time. And that's what I learned to do. If I say, because I know the human mind doesn't like to give anything up, it's human condition. But if I offer something up, if I say, God, I'm going to hand this to you. Please help me with this. And either the next day or in 90 days, I have no idea when, all of a sudden it's gone. I don't want it anymore. And as a result of praying like that, I have a long list. I also became interested in OA in the reading many years into the program when it said behaviors. It talked about behaviors, not just food. I became curious. And that's when change happened to me, when all of a sudden I'm curious about something. It's important to stay curious. So what does that mean, behaviors? So here I am years later, and I recently became abstinent about a behavior. So in the middle of the night, I would have one of my abstinent snacks. There's nothing wrong with the snack. It's a beautiful, it's an apple and a little bit of nuts. But I was eating it in the middle of the night, and that is not good for the digestive system. And I knew I had to go. And I had to do my prayer and say, okay, God. And also, I was guided to reach out and call someone. And I just love it. I mean, they say to me, all of you say to me what I say to you. And that's how this works, this whole community, this magic in this community. And the gal said,
2 minutes.
thank you, dear. What are you willing to do different tonight? And I said, okay, I could do this. And that's what I learned in OA. In OA, we can do hard things. So I'll just tell you this quickly. A few years ago, I was on an OA meeting, and I was saying to someone, I think we were in fellowship, I said, you know, it's kind of funny. When I came here, I was in great shape, I was 125 pounds. I said, and here I am all these years later, abstinent. And I'm 50 pounds overweight. I said, I guess I'm not exactly the poster child of OA. And this man just said to me, and what is the poster child of OA? And just from saying that question, I realized I was shaming myself. I was shaming myself. There's no poster child of OA because this is not just about food and appearance, it's about learning to cope with life on life's terms. Stuffing myself and starving myself with coping mechanisms. And OA says, here's a toolbox with 9+ tools in them. This is how you cope with life. And being here is how we cope with life. And if everybody would just send a kiss to heaven for my little Frankie, I would really appreciate it. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you. Namaste.